still be true? Would it be too much to ask of you to say, I'll be true?
Talk Shoe recorded live,
and right, let me just turn down the music here, folks. I'm blending Talk Shoe and Eurofolk Radio together. That's a song called Jealous Heart, and I'm trying to find a theme song for our show here, Yahweh's Covenant People, and we'll be trying a few out now and then. We are simulcasting. Hold on, I've got to unplug my phone because it's going to be ringing during the show. Terrible timing here. Okay. So, I can't have the recording be beeping throughout the show. If it takes a message, the recording answering machine starts beeping. And so, in any case... quick announcement. Of course, this is Pastor Eli James, Yahweh's Covenant People, and this is October 16th, 2015, and Greg Howard is not going to be able to be with us this evening because he is moving from one location to another, and it's just too much trouble for him. I don't think he's got his equipment set up anyway to do the show, and hopefully he'll be back with us this evening. I'm sorry, next week, next evening. And I'm just thinking of saying a prayer for Pastor Howard. And he is actually a graduate of Divinity School. I forget the college in the South. And he is, in fact, an ordained pastor of Universalism. But he never embraced it, always thought there was something wrong with it. Actually, he thought there was something wrong with himself because he couldn't agree with the doctrines. But, you know, he had to defer while he was a student, defer to the teachers who were teaching Universalism, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't until he discovered identity that he realized what a crock the Judeo-Christian teaching is, and multiculturalism and the whole deal. So I'm going to say a prayer for Greg Howard, because and he needs your support as well. He's going through some trying times. He also is in need of a job, and he's been looking for work for the last few months. And so, Father Yahweh, please provide our brother, our dearly beloved brother, Greg Howard, with a means for him to support himself so he can be untroubled in his doings for identity, and for him to come back to this show and be a regular contributor. Please provide him with a very well-paying job, a secure job, which will enable him to be the pastor that he deserves and needs and wants to be for his flock, Christian Identity. And let this be immediate, because there's no reason to delay. You know, Father, that his work on your behalf has been sincere and assiduous and dedicated. He's dedicated himself to you and your people, Israel, and he needs to be rewarded for that. So in the name of your son, Yahshua, please accomplish this quickly and let him be employed gainfully, and so that he has no worries about finances or a place to stay or a place from which he can broadcast on a weekly basis here on Yahweh's Covenant People. In the name of your son, Yahshua, amen. Thank you. Okay, folks, we're continuing to experiment with, you know, playing music and simulcasting with Talk Shoe and with Eurofolk Radio. And so the last few weeks, things have been going pretty well. Last night, we made history on Truth or Consequences. Stock trader Dan and I completed the entire reading of the whole Bible. I think it took us something like 9 years to do it. And we started with Genesis 1 and went all the way to Revelation 22, but we skipped the book of Isaiah and saved it for the end, primarily because when we were getting to it, I didn't feel confident to interpret it properly and interpret it knowledgeably. So we deferred the book of Isaiah until the very end, and I think we did a credible job the last, I don't know how many shows, must have been something like 10 or 12 shows on the book of Isaiah. And the last night we completed the reading of the entire Bible on the internet with commentary. I don't think anything like that has ever been done. So that's all available on the archives of Truth or Consequences, and that's 77847 on TalkShoe. And some of those shows have been featured on Eurofolk Radio. So now that we have pretty much overcome the technical problems of putting Eurofolk Radio on the air, we have been trying to do this on a very low budget, basically using programs that are free of charge or programs that only cost a pittance, like $10 a month. We pay two providers $10 a month to air Eurofolk Radio, and we do all the rest of it with free programs available on the internet, so it costs us virtually nothing to broadcast all over the world without commercials, of course. And that's why we're doing this on a low budget, so we don't have to use commercials to support the radio station. And we have recently put a donation button on at Eurofolk Radio, so feel free to donate whatever you can and to make this a more professional operation as we go forward. And, of course, we're hoping to bring more and more people aboard and bring we're trying to get a hold of our authors and artists for interviews. We're trying to get a hold of more hosts for various shows and to really make this radio station competitive against the lies of the Jews and their total control of mass media. So hopefully we can put this type of product. Of course, this has to be done by volunteer effort. All of those involved are volunteering their time. And, of course, it's just not just time on the air, but in preparing for shows. It takes quite a lot of effort to prepare for shows and get them ready and make sure that they run smoothly and so we don't come off looking like idiots or fools or, you know, the least we can do is be somewhat better than a Jew who can outspend us by a trillion to one. There's no reason why we can't be professional, and so that's what we're trying to do. And but we can be professional and volunteers at the same time. So glad to see everybody in the chat room today. I guess there's only like a handful, like six people in the chat room at the moment, probably because we have been off for the last 2 weeks. And so, but we'll start back up and don't anticipate any breaks in programming until Passover, which would be next spring. So the entire winter, we should have constant programming every Friday night here on Yahweh's Covenant People. So for this evening, I have chosen to get back into the Damascus document. And I'll see what I'll do. I'm going to break this screen in half so that I can see the chat room and the document I'll be reading on the screen at the same time. So if there's any questions that you might have in the chat room, I can see that while I'm actually reading from the document. These computers invented by white people are an amazing thing, very much amazing. And of course, I will also take phone calls, so anybody who wants to just feel free to call in on TalkShoe. If I see the phone, my phone symbol is blue, If I see somebody has called in, their phone symbol will appear red, and I can unclick them so they can speak. So we'll see if anybody wants to call in this evening. So I started this subject several weeks ago, maybe about 10 shows ago, something like that. The Damascus Document, Part 1. And I pretty much forgot where I left off, but looking over the document, I decided it's probably best to start with Chapter 5 of the Damascus Document and continue from there. So this will be the Damascus Document, Part 2. It's one of the Dead Sea Scrolls, which, in my opinion, are Israelite literature. It's obvious that they're Israelite literature because you have, for example, the entire book of Isaiah is part of the Qumran scrolls, and various other chapters and fragments from the Old Testament, much of it proving the antiquity of the Old Testament, something which was doubted by many up until the time that the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, and proving the antiquity of the Bible. And it has fragments of the Apocrypha and also other documents that no one has ever heard of, but it's all very clearly Israelite literature because it all references episodes in the history of the Israelites. So no one else on the earth would have any interest in recording such information about Israel. So it's obviously Israelite literature. And much of it proves the exclusivity of Israel, which is actually a major theme of the Bible from beginning to end. But because both the Jews and the Judeo-Christians have tried to universalize it. Now, why would the Jews want to universalize the Bible? Well, it's because they know it's not their book. They know it's our book. And they want to universalize it so that we Israelites, the white Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Caucasian people, would not be able to consider it as our own book and that it belongs to the whole world. No, it doesn't. It belongs to us because only we are the covenant people. The covenants were made exclusively with us. The commandments were given only to us. And the promises and the Messiah were promised only to us, the Redeemer was promised only to us. And because our ancestors sinned against Yahweh and were cast off and divorced by him, only the Israelites needed to be redeemed. So we're the only ones that have anything to do with any of this history, and we're the only beneficiaries of the promises. Now, of course, part of the promise is that we Israelites would restore righteousness to planet Earth. We are the city on a hill. And that anybody who opposes us will be destroyed by Yahweh. And anyone who finds it profitable to themselves to support us, Yahweh will reward them in one way or another. But they are not the covenant people, and their DNA will not change, and they will not become quote-unquote spiritual Israelites or anything of the kind. They will simply be allowed to live on into the kingdom, not as Israelites, but as whatever race they happen to be in. So, and the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Apocrypha, et cetera, all teach pretty much the same thing in this matter, that the covenant people are exclusive, they have a special status in Yahweh's eyes, but because we have sinned so often in the past and are still sinning today, he chastises us, just as he would his own children. And that is the difference between the Israelites and the other peoples of the world. We are his direct descendants through Adam and Eve, whereas the other races are merely created. And that's the difference between Christian identity and covenant identity, covenant Christianity, versus the universalistic junk that's being preached by the pulpit bastards all over the world today. So I'm going to start out now with chapter 5, verse 1. And of course, this is addressed to Israel and Israel only, because only Israel was given the Ten Commandments and the rest of the law, and only the promises of the covenant, so were given to Israel and no one else. Chapter 5, verse 1, and of course, this is from www.pseudepigrapha.com. That's PSEUDEPIGRAPHA.com, pseudepigrapha.com, or just type in the Damascus document into your browser. Here, let me copy it real quick, and I'll put it in the chat box so that you can go there and check it out for yourself. Chapter 5, verse 1, but with them that held fast by the commandments of God, God confirmed the covenant of Israel forever. Forever. Well, this does not in any way differ from the teachings of the known Bible, the known Old Testament. Because Israel as a people will exist forever. The Bible clearly says so, and so does the Damascus document. Revealing unto them the hidden things wherein all Israel had erred. Okay, and of course, let's put it this way. Many of the Israelites of both houses, whether it's House of Judah or House of Israel, if they became very wealthy or very status prone, you know, were a judge or a king or a queen or anything like that, they tended to become arrogant and also tended to credit themselves with their fortunes and with their prosperity. And they forgot Yahweh. And that's just one of the ways in which the Israelites had erred. Of course, many of them practiced Baal worship. Okay. Okay, well, the fact is, 7 of Nun says, of course, Yahweh told the prophet to write a bill of divorcement, but I have not seen the document. I believe the prophet did not write one. Well, Yahweh says that he divorced us, and I forget which minor prophet goes into the major details, but the Bible says that he has given us a writ of divorce. And and then he wants to bring us back. So let's continue with. In fact, I will allure you are the exact words that Yahweh uses. I will allure you and bring you back. Verse 2, his holy Sabbaths and his glorious festivals, his righteous testimonies and his true ways and the desires of his will, the which if a man do, he shall live by them. This is like right out of scripture. He opened before them, and they digged a well of many waters, and he that despises them shall not live. All right, so if you despise his commandments, you will not live. Verse 4, but they wallowed in the transgression of men and in the ways of the unclean woman. And they said that it belongs to us. Okay, and what? What belongs to us? Well, the inheritance. No, if you do not obey his commandments, you don't get none. You don't get the inheritance. You shall be counted as a tare, not as a grain of wheat. And if you maintain your unrighteousness and your rebelliousness against Yahweh and his commandments and his covenants, which were made exclusively with us, Israel, then you might as well be a tear. You might as well be a Jew, because you are not living according to the tenets of the true faith, which he demands of us. Now, of course, he doesn't demand these things of us. We are to do these things of our own free will. He doesn't force us to obey his commandments. He doesn't force us to observe his feast days. He doesn't force us to do anything, because he is a loving father and he wants us to do these things of our own free will. He doesn't want to be a whip master or a slave master. He wants us to be real children who have consciences and wills of our own. That's what the Father wants. And that's why he gets so angry with us when we disobey. Verse 5, but God wondrously pardoned their sins and forgave their transgression. This is, of course, a futuristic reference to the sacrifice on the cross. And he built them a sure house in Israel, the like of which never rose from of old nor until his day, probably talking about the Temple of Solomon. Verse 6, they who hold fast to him are for the life of eternity. And all the glory of man is for them. Okay, so if we keep his laws, this glory is ours. But if we don't keep his laws, there is no glory. As God confirmed it to them through Ezekiel the prophet, saying, quote, the priests and the Levites and the sons of Zadok, that is Melchizedek, that keep the charge of my sanctuary when the children of Israel went astray from them, they shall bring near unto me fat and blood. So they will continue doing the right things, the things that I ask of them, even though the vast majority of Israelites do not. Now, chapter 6, there's a heading here. I don't know if this is part of the actual Damascus document or whether the translator, which is R.H. Charles in this case, has added this as a description of the chapter. Anyway, it says, and it's in red, migration of the penitents to Damascus, sons of Zadok hold office in the end of the days, law to be obeyed, and relations with Judah broken off in the period in which Belial is let loose. And of course, now we're not talking about Jews. When he says Judah here, we're talking about real racial Judahites. We're not talking about Edomite Jews and race mixed Jews. There is no such thing as a pure race Jew. They're all hybrids of one kind or another. So, chapter 6, verse 1, the priests are the penitents of Israel who went forth out of the land of Judah, and the Levites are they who joined them. And the sons of Zadok are the elect of Israel, called by the name, that are holding office in the end of the days. Now, of course, there was a Zadok priesthood during the days of the Maccabees. And even Paul tells us that Yahshua Messiah is the high priest of the order of Melchizedek. Melchizedek, meaning king priest, a kingdom of priests, and Jesus Christ, Yahshua Messiah, is our high priest. For those of us who obey his laws, anybody who does not obey these laws cannot possibly be considered a priest of Melchizedek or of the order thereof. Cannot possibly. So we better, if we want to consider ourselves the sons and daughters of Zadok, we better keep the law. Verse 3, and the sons of Zadok are the elect of Israel, called by the name, that are holding office in the end of the days. Now, of course, just as John the Baptist was the advance man for the first coming, it sounds here like we, the sons and daughters of Zadok, are to be the advance men and the advanced women of the kingdom at the second coming. Behold, the statement of their names according to their generations, that is, according to their descent, according to their lines of descent, and the period of their office, and the number of their afflictions, and the years of their sojournings, and the statement of their work. So there is a record being kept, and of course, the house of Judah kept such a record. And, of course, Yahweh and his angels are keeping a record on us, keeping merits and demerits, because we will be judged according to our works, not according to our mere beliefs. Read the book of Revelation if you don't believe me. It says many times we will be judged according to our works, not according to our faith, belief, or attitudes. Of course, true faith is practicing what you preach, that's true faith, and so it better be punctuated with good works, otherwise it will count for nothing. Verse 4, The first saints whom God pardoned both justified the righteous and condemned the wicked. This is how it will be at the judgment day as well. The righteous will be justified and the wicked will be condemned. This is the exact opposite of what today's pulpit bastards teach. They teach that you were forgiven 2,000 years ago at the cross. It doesn't matter what you did since that day. You've been forgiven, and therefore you will go to heaven. That is exactly what these pulpit bastards teach. And they are the evil liars who are leading the flock astray today, just as we had evil priests in the days of Israel doing the same thing, teaching false doctrine to lead the people astray. Verse 5, and all they who come after them must do according to the interpretation of the law, in which the forefathers were instructed until the consummation of the period of these years. So, this Damascus document confirms that the law must be obeyed. Verse 6, in accordance with the covenant which God established with the forefathers in order to pardon their sins, so shall God make atonement for them. And, of course, this happened at the first advent. And it's going to happen again because there will be one final roll call. I guess that's the best way of putting it. One final roll call. And Yahweh will ask us, are you with me or are you against me? And if you're just trying to get away with something, Yahweh knows your heart. He knows it, whether you're sincere or not, or whether you have obeyed his laws or not. And it won't do any good to lie. You better be prepared to fess up. At least Yahweh will see that you're being honest for once in your life and not a hypocrite. Okay. Let me read this again. This is an important verse. Verse 4, the first saints whom God pardoned both justified the righteous and condemned the wicked. This was at the first advent, folks. The wicked were condemned. It's not true that the wicked were saved. Only the repentant were saved. Although our past sins, Paul clearly declares that our past sins were forgiven, so does Peter. The sins that are past, they were forgiven unconditionally. But that does not give you a blank check to go on sinning from that moment on. That is an absolutely false teaching. Verse 5, and all they who come after them must do according to the interpretation of the law in which the forefathers were instructed until the consummation of the period of these years, in accordance with the covenant which God established with the forefathers. Again, here's forefathers, forefathers, forefathers. These are our forefathers, nobody else's forefathers. No one except true Israel had this history. Only Israel passed under the cloud, under the pillar of fire. Only Israel crossed the Red Sea, etc., etc. This is all very exclusive. That's why these remembrances are put here. So shall God make atonement for them. Verse 7, and on the consummation of the period of these years, they shall no more join themselves to the house of Judah, but shall everyone stand up against his net, or maybe tent? Net would be kind of unusual, unless he's talking about, you know, a common expression, unless it's a colloquialism. Verse 8, the wall shall have been built, the boundary been far removed. And during all these years, Belial shall be let loose against Israel, as God spake through Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, saying, quote, fear and the pit and the snare are upon thee, speaking to Israel, O inhabitant of the land. This means the three nets of Belial, concerning which Levi the son of Jacob spake, by which he caught Israel and directed their faces to three kinds of righteousness. The first is, or it should be, three kinds of unrighteousness. The first is fornication. The second is the wealth of wickedness. I would say the vanity of the Israelites increases proportionately with their physical wealth, with how much money they have. And it seems like the more prosperous the Israelites get, the more vain they get, and the more they pat themselves on the back for being successful in this world, and they forget Yahweh. So they, in direct proportion that they become wealthy, or in inverse proportion to how wealthy they become, they forget Yahweh. The wealthier they get, the more they forget Yahweh. The poorer they are, the more they remember Yahweh. And that's been the history of our people. So wealth is actually a curse for true Israelites. The Jews were never God's chosen people or God's people in any way. So it doesn't matter whether the Jew is rich or poor. He is a condemned Edomite. So that prosperity means nothing with respect to Edomites. But with respect to us, it's very obvious that when our people, the Israelites, become wealthy, they become arrogant and uncompassionate. They become aristocratic, and they forget to love their own people, and they forget Yahweh, and they forget His commandments. And this is not even debatable. This is the history of our people. This happens so often that it should be etched in our minds that this is the reality of the situation. Verse 8, the wall shall have been built, the boundary been far removed, and during all these years Belial shall be let loose against Israel, as God spake through Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, saying, fear and the pit and the snare are upon thee, O inhabitant. Okay, so what are the three kinds of unrighteousness? This is obviously a misprint here. It should be three kinds of unrighteousness. The first is fornication. The second is the wealth. The third is the pollution of the sanctuary. What does that mean? Well, it means that the priests have gone sour. The priests are not doing what they're supposed to do. And they, even the priests themselves are practicing Baal worship, as they are today. As they absolutely are today. Verse 12. He that cometh up from this shall be caught by that, and he that escapeth from this shall be caught by the other, I think is what he means to say. So if you're not trapped by one of these nets, and that's what he means by net. Now I'm understanding verse 7. Let me read verse 7 again. And on the consummation of the period of these years, they shall no more join themselves to the house of Judah, but shall everyone stand up against his net. Okay, so, and then he defines what these nets are in the succeeding verses. And there's these three different kinds of nets. One of these three nets is going to ensnare you. Fornication, wealth, and pollution. Pollution of the sanctuary, that is general disobedience of Yahweh's laws. And I think this would include hypocrisy as a main feature, because what do the priests do? Well, they go into the sanctuary pretending to be the servants of Yahweh, when in fact what they're actually doing is they're leading the flock astray, or they're total hypocrites and not practicing what they preach. So this is very, very common. This was common in the days just before the first advent, and it is definitely common today, as the priesthood has created a very much false sense of righteousness, or they have eschewed righteousness whatsoever. I'm going to quote here Ezekiel chapter 34, verses 9 through 13, to show you exactly what this Damascus document is talking about in terms of polluting the sanctuary. Thus says the mighty Yahweh, I am against you, shepherds, and I will demand my sheep from your hands, and will dismiss you from your shepherdship of the flock. And you, shepherds, shall shepherd yourselves no more. but I will rescue my sheep from you, and you shall not devour them. I will attend my sheep and look after them, as a shepherd looks after his flock during the time he is amongst the scattered sheep. And of course, he's talking about sending his son Yahweh, his son Yahshua, amongst us to gather his sheep. So I will look after my sheep and rescue them from all from the hollows where they have been scattered in a day of cloud and darkness, and will bring them out from the peoples and collect them from the countries and shepherd them on the hills of Israel. So in other words, whatever countries we have been scattered to, doesn't mean he's going to gather us all in a single place. But we will be regathered to him morally and spiritually and be protected by his angels against all and sundry. And bring them out. Come out of Babylon, my people. Revelation chapter 18. These verses from Ezekiel are in the same spirit. So we know from Ezekiel and from this document, from recorded history, that the Israelites have had horrible priests, rebellious priests, who have set a horrible example and have exploited the people for their own benefit. Okay, chapter 7. The sin of fornication, Charles gives this heading, and divorce forbidden. Verse 1. The builders of the wall who walk after law, the law it is which talks, of which he said, assuredly they shall talk, are caught by fornication and taking two wives during their lifetime. But the fundamental principle of the creation, male and female, he created them. And they who went into the ark, two and two went into the ark. And by the way, the Old Testament says that no hybrids were allowed on the ark. And as to the prince, it is written, he shall not multiply wives unto himself. Of course, we're talking about the kings of Israel. Of course, they all had numerous wives. This is just the vanity of, the vanity of status, wealth, and power. But David read not in the book of the law that was sealed, which was in the ark, for it was not opened in Israel from the day of the death of Eleazar and Joshua and the elders who served Ashtaroth. And this is very interesting, because it seems to be saying that David was not aware of this law, because this law was hidden from him because it was sealed away. So Yahweh is going to forgive David for, I think David had 7, 8, or 9 wives. And but I know this is stated in the scriptures, not just hidden away, but what it's telling us here, that David was not aware of this law because he did not read the book of the law that was sealed, which is in the ark, and it probably contained this law. So perhaps David would not have violated this law had he actually been aware of the law. In any case, for it was not opened in Israel from the day of the death of Eleazar and Joshua and the elders who served Ashtaroth. Wow, Astarte, they served a pagan goddess. And it was hidden and was not discovered until Zadok arose. Now Zadok was, there was the original Zadok, was a son of Aaron, but there was also a priest named Zadok among the Maccabees. So I think it's talking about the Maccabean Zadok here. Now they glorified the deeds of David, save only the blood of Uriah, and God abandoned them to him. So again, this they have absolutely right. The murder of Uriah was the only episode in which Yahweh's displeasure with David is recorded. Chapter 8, heading, the sin of polluting the sanctuary. Chapter 8, verse 1. And they also pollute the sanctuary, since they separate not according to the law, and lie with her who sees the blood of her issue. Oh boy. It's bad enough when regular guys do this, but when the priests... So in other words, we're not to have intercourse with a menstruous woman. And they take to wife each his brother's daughter or his sister's daughter. Oh, no. They were practicing incest. Oh, my goodness. Now, I wasn't aware of these things. But this is what's recorded in the Damascus document. But Moses said, thou shalt not approach thy mother's sister. She is thy mother's near kin. So the law of intercourse for males is written, and the same law holds for females. Let not the daughter of the brother uncover the nakedness of the brother of her father. He is near, so not your uncle. You don't touch your uncle. Ladies, you don't touch your uncle. Gentlemen, you don't touch your aunt. Wow. They also polluted their Holy Spirit, and with a tongue of blasphemies they opened the mouth. That is, they performed these sins while praising Yahweh, being hypocrites. Against the statutes of the covenant of God, which of course the priests should have been most aware of, more aware of than the people, more aware of than the kings and queens, they are not established, but abominations they speak regarding them. Verse 14. They are all kindlers of fire and setters of flame of firebrands. In other words, they are rabble-rousers, taking advantage of the people, stirring up trouble, and being leaders of sects and rebels. Verse 15, the web of spiders are their weavings, and the eggs of cockatrices are their eggs. Verse 16, he who comes near them shall not be innocent. He that chooseth them shall be held guilty unless he was forced. So in other words, if, oh, guest eight, no, I can't make it to Fort Wayne. I haven't received an invitation, so I didn't get anything in the mail. So I'm not, wasn't aware that there's anything happening, special happening at Fort Wayne this weekend. So, but if I have time Saturday evening, I might, but I don't think I'll be able to do it Sunday. In any case, so if you, unless you've been forced under pain of pain or death to join them, Yahweh will not hold us against you. But if you ultimately voluntarily, oh, the usual get-together, okay, yeah, no, not this weekend, but I'm thinking of doing that more frequently this winter. I have to arrange, although I could do the shows from a motel in Fort Wayne. That should be no problem at all. Verse 17, aforetime God visited their works, and his wrath was kindled because of their devices. Yeah, numerous times, hundreds of times, thousands of times, Yahweh had to chastise our ancestors for these devices. Verse 18, for it is a people of no understanding, but they should have, our ancestors should have understood. Our people should have understood. Why did they not obey? Well, because fornication is just too tempting. And, of course, living the luxurious life of status and power is just too tempting. And declaring yourself to be an all-wise shepherd among the people is just too tempting. The Pharisees, if you recall the show I did, the show I did about the Pharisees actually began as an Israelite sect among the house of Judah. They were originally Judahites, but they began to rebel against Yahweh's law. They obviously became very arrogant, and they were eventually taken over by Edomites under Herod. So basically, and it was because of their unrighteousness that they actually accepted Edomites among their members, although Josephus recounts that Herod slaughtered the entire Judahite Sanhedrin and replaced them with his cronies, the vast majority of whom would have been Edomites. There probably were a few Judahites in there, namely rebellious Judahites, traitor Judahites, who were working for Herod. And so they are a nation void of counsel because there is no understanding in them. Well, if you abandon your laws, his laws, for a couple of generations, then the understanding is lost. Verse 19, for aforetime arose Moses and Aaron through the prince of the lights, but Belial raised Johanne and his brother with his evil device when the former delivered Israel. He's talking about Judahites here of the house of Maccabee, because there was division even among them, which of course reminds me of our own civil war, the war between the North and the South. Brother fighting against brother, just as the Maccabees did. Chapter 8, heading, when the land was laid desolate, God would raise up wise men who would restudy the law and go in exile to Damascus. And according to its precepts, the repentant ones should walk till I, the teacher of righteousness, arose. This is very interesting. Now, I'm not sure how close Qumran is to Damascus. And maybe this is what's being told. Maybe they had a temporary headquarters in Damascus. Josephus tells us that the Essenes were number one, the only pure-blooded Judahites among the three sects, the Essenes, the Pharisees, and the Sadducees. And they were the only ones who kept faithful to the law. So it really sounds like this is an Essene document, and they must have had at least a temporary headquarters at Damascus. And maybe they kept their records at Qumran. It'd be interesting to check as to the geography of Qumran and Damascus as to how close they really are. And yes, it would be much easier for me to attend a Saturday evening service, guest 8. And, you know, I'll be doing that sooner than later. Okay, chapter 8, verse 1. And during the period of the destruction of the land, there arose those who removed the landmark and led Israel astray. And, of course, even the Judahites referred to themselves as Israel. The house of Judah referred to itself as Israel. You see that in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. Even though those books are about the house of Judah, the two tribes of Judah, Benjamin, some Levites, and a few stray members of the other tribes that lived among them. But it was basically the house of Judah, the two tribes and the Levites. And the land became desolate because they spake rebellion against the commandments of God through Moses and also through his holy anointed one. And I think they're probably speaking about the high priest of the Maccabees who was faithful to the law. And they prophesied a lie to turn away Israel from God. So what else is new? Okay, John Beauclerc says, Qumran is close to the Dead Sea. Damascus is quite a way northeast. So it's still possible that Damascus was kind of a meeting place for refugees or exiles from Jerusalem. Okay, very good. Thank you. All right, and let's continue here. And the land became desolate because they spake rebellion against the commandments of God. But God remembered the covenant with their forefathers, and he raised up from Aaron men of understanding, and from Israel wise men, and he made them to hearken. And they digged the well, a well the princes digged, the nobles of the people delved it, by the order of the lawgiver. The well is the law, and they who digged it are the penitents of Israel, who went forth out of the land, that is the repentant ones, the penitents of Israel who went forth out of the land of Judah and sojourned in the land of Damascus. This sounds like it's telling us how the Essenes, although they don't call themselves Essenes in this document, but I don't know if this, you know, what period this was. I think they refer to themselves here as Maccabees. This is obviously a history of the Maccabees, the penitent or repentant Maccabees, who, so like I said, there was a civil war, brother against brother. And the righteous Maccabees are the ones who went to Damascus, is what we're being told here. All of whom God called princes. For they sought him, and his glory was not turned back in the mouth of one of them. And the lawgiver is he who studies the law, in regard to whom Isaiah said, quote, he bringeth forth an instrument for his work. Now, it's interesting here that one of their number refers to himself as the Prince of Righteousness, and I think that is not overstating the case. But I think Isaiah was referring to Yeshua, right? And, you know, but kudos to him for thinking of himself as a lawgiver, because that's what we're all supposed to be. We're supposed to be law. In other words, we're supposed to be reading. And that's what we did at the last Feast of Tabernacles down in Kentucky, and the one in Colorado. We studied the law extensively. And I'll be doing a presentation on Eurofolk Radio very soon, a video presentation about the subjects we discussed at Tabernacles a week ago in Kentucky. And so and that is Sodom and Egypt. Sodom, of course, being all kinds of sexual rebellion, all kinds of sexual sins, especially homosexuality, and how it is condemned in the New Testament, and Egypt being representative of slavery. And, of course, we're living in the slavery of the fractional reserve banking system today, Mystery Babylon. And so, unfortunately, the Judeo-Christians do not understand any of this, right? They don't even know they're enslaved by the banksters. They're clueless. They don't even know that the banksters are Jews, who they falsely believe to be God's chosen, showing how clueless they really are. But it's because, why? Because they have no respect for the law. If they understood, if they had any respect for the law, they would know things like this. Verse 6, the well is the law, and they who digged it are the penitents of Israel. Verse 8, for they sought him, and his glory was not turned back in the mouth of one of them. And the lawgiver is he who studies the law, in regard to whom Isaiah said, he bringeth forth an instrument for his work. And of course, we have always interpreted that as the coming of Yahshua Messiah. And the nobles of the people are those who came to dig the well by the precepts in which the lawgiver ordained that they should walk through the full period of the wickedness. Oh, in other words, the elect, the nobles, the diggers, the well diggers. We're the well diggers because we're digging up the law to recite it. The rest of our people are trying to bury it. But we're the ones very busily digging it back up and preaching it, sounding it from the rooftops. And we will be doing it throughout the full period of the wickedness until the second coming. There's no doubt about that. Verse 10. And save them, they shall get nothing until there arises the teacher of righteousness in the end of days. Now, of course, the teachers at Qumran must have thought that the coming of the Messiah, the first advent, would be the conclusion of all things. So it doesn't seem as though they understood that there would be two advents. I'm not aware that they understood that or taught it. Verse 11. And none who have entered into the covenant shall enter into the sanctuary to kindle his altar, but they shall shut the doors concerning whom God said, oh, that there was one among you to shut the doors, so that ye might not vainly kindle the tire upon my altar. shut the doors to non-Israelites or shut the doors to pollution. That's probably what's intended here. Verse 12, unless they observe to do according to the true meaning of the law until the period of the wickedness and to sever themselves from the children of the pit and to hold aloof from the polluted wealth of the wickedness under a vow and a curse and from the wealth of the sanctuary. In other words, don't get enamored of the three webs previously enunciated. Don't allow yourself to be tempted by those three things. Arrogance, wealth, and pollution. Don't let yourself be tempted by those three things, and you'll be okay. Verse 13. And in respect to robbing the pool of his people so that widows may be their spoil. How about Joel Osteen? Buy my books and you and God will save you. Right? As far as I know, none of these people who has ever donated money to a televangelist has ever been rewarded by Yahweh. That includes Benny Hinn and all of the other false prophets of televangelism who simply make things up and pretend it comes from the Bible. Verse 13, and in respect to robbing the pool of his people so that widows may be their spoil. Well, widows and widowers have been known to write huge checks to the likes of Joel Osteen. And his promise of prosperity has never panned out. The gospel of prosperity is not part of the Bible, folks. The Bible clearly says we are to have tribulation to test us and will test us. And only those who understand this will make it to the kingdom. Verse 14. And to make a difference between the clean and the unclean. Remember the passages? Yes, guest 8, Osteen is a thief. Yes, he's a scammer. A very good one. Smooth-talking scammer. And between the clean and the unclean. Now, the passage in the New Testament, they have mistranslated. I think it's Romans chapter 3, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe it was 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Where the translators insert the word thing right after clean. Touch not the unclean, it says. And they insert the word thing there. It's in italics in the King James, so you know it was added by the translators. To neutralize the text. In other words, to make it seem like the text is speaking of inanimate objects and not other people. We're not to touch unclean people. Is the true meaning of that phrase. So they added the word thing to fool us into believing it's about inanimate objects. So don't touch a dirty rag. is that what it's supposed to mean? Don't touch a dirty rag? Or don't touch the wrong end of the stick? No, that whole context of the whole passage is people. And of course, this is how these nasty people who call themselves shepherds fool us and trick us into believing their doctrine instead of Yahweh's law. Let me read this again from Ezekiel chapter 34, verses 9 through 13. Thus says Yahweh, I am against you, shepherds, and I will demand my sheep from your hands and will dismiss you from your shepherdship of the flock, and you, shepherds, shall shepherd yourselves no more. But I will rescue my sheep from you, and you shall not devour them. I will attend my sheep and look after them, as a shepherd looks after his flock during the time he is amongst the scattered sheep. So I will look after my sheep and rescue them from all the hollows where they have been scattered in the day of cloud and darkness, and will bring them out from the peoples and collect them from the countries and shepherd them on the hills of Israel. So praise Yahweh. We pray that this day comes very, very soon, because we need to be separated from the evils of this world. And the more we are forced by circumstances to live among the unclean, the more likely we are to become unclean ourselves. So praise Yahweh. I plead with you, Yahweh, give us discernment, so that we can understand the difference between the clean and the unclean. And it's not talking about things, it's talking about people. And by the way, verse concerning the feasts. Actually, let me read, but go back to verse 12 and read this whole passage here, which includes the feasts. Unless they observe to do according to the true meaning of the law until the period of the wickedness, and to sever themselves from the children of the pit, and to hold aloof from the polluted wealth of wickedness under a vow and a curse, and from the wealth of the sanctuary, and in respect to robbing the pool of his people, so that widows may be their spoil, and they may murder the fatherless. Abortion. Infanticide. Casting your children off, and allowing them to be homeless. These are the things that are going on today. Verse 14, and to make a difference between the clean and the unclean, and to make men discern between the holy and the profane, and to observe the Sabbath according to its true meaning, and the feasts, and the day of the fast, according to the utterances of them who entered into the new covenant in the land of Damascus. So let me read verse 15. And to observe the Sabbath according to its true meaning, and the feasts, and the day of the fast, according to the utterances of them who entered in the new covenant in the land of Damascus. And the day of the fast is the Day of Atonement. It's the only commanded fast day of the entire feast day calendar. Of course, you can fast as often as you want, and it's probably a very healthy thing to do. Verse 16, to contribute their holy things according to the true interpretation, to love everyone his brother as himself, and to strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy and the stranger. A stranger would be ger here, that is, Israelites who dwell in other countries. And to seek everyone the peace of his brother. Let me read verse 17 again. To love everyone his brother as himself, and to strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy and the stranger, and to seek everyone the peace of his brother. In other words, you're supposed to watch out for each other. To hold aloof from harlots, according to the law, and that no man should commit a trespass against his next of kin. To rebuke everyone his brother according to the commandments. So if you find that they're doing something wrong, advise them accordingly. And not to bear a grudge from day to day, and to separate from all the pollutions according to their judgments. So this is really great advice. And no man shall make abominable with these his Holy Spirit according to as God separated these from them. So in other words, we're not supposed to mix with non-Israelites, because our spirit is not to be given to them. We are to be separated from them. 2 Corinthians 6:14. Have nothing to do with unbelievers. Certainly, Jews are unbelievers. Arabs are unbelievers. Only white people can be true Christians, because only we have His Holy Spirit, if we choose to have it. But if we reject it, we might as well be Jews. Verse 20, and no man shall make abominable with his Holy Spirit, according as God separated these. So the separation principle is here, underscored. As for all those who walk in these things in the perfection of holiness, according to all the ordinances, the covenant of God. Wow, this is great stuff. Now we've got two columns here. A, standeth fast unto them to preserve them to 1,000 generations. In other words, forever. To preserve us as a separate, Holy, holy meaning called out. This is another way of saying separate. B, standeth fast unto them to preserve them for thousands of generations, as it is written, who keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to a thousand generations. So it's quoting scripture here. Of course, they didn't have chapter and verse. Even if they had a Hebrew copy of the Old Testament, it didn't have chapter and verse in those days. It was only headed by the, or actually signed by the prophet who wrote it. Chapter 9, the law as to binding and loosing. Verse 1, and if they settle in camps according to the order of the land and take wives and beget children, they shall walk according to the law and according to the judgments of the ordinances, according to the order of the law as he spake, between a man and his wife and between a father and his son. And of course, the Israelites are not to commit fornication and intermarriage with other races. So this only applies to Israel. And I guess it's giving us two separate translations here, A and B. So I just read chapter 9, verse 1 from the A column. I'll read it now from the B column. And if they settle in camps according to the statutes of the land which were from of old, and take wives according to the custom of the law, and beget children, they shall walk according to the judgments of the ordinances, according to the order of the law, as he spake. Now, the judgments of the ordinances. Well, the judgments are, you know, when someone is found guilty at law, they would pay the price, pay the penalty. And, of course, there's only two penalties, retribution or death. So if you committed a non-capital offense against your neighbor, you would have to pay whatever you stole from them or whatever you destroyed. And even if it was accidental, you still owed them, because more often than not, it was based on negligence. So, but this you would do to because your neighbor is your brother, and you don't grudge your neighbor. If you accidentally burn down your neighbor's house, you owe him the house, okay? And if you do it in the right spirit, Yahweh will provide you with the means to do so, and he will provide you with the means to build your own house. This is the kind of faith you're supposed to have. Between a man and his wife, and between a father and his sons. Chapter 9, verses 2 and 3, threatened judgment on those who rejected the statutes. Another misprint here is it says statutes, should be statutes. Column A, verse 2 and 3, but as for all them that reject, I guess column A is the text that they have, and column B is the fill-ins, the missing words. So let me read column A. But as for all them that reject, when God will bring a visitation upon the land, they shall be requited with the recompense of the wicked. When there shall come to pass the word which is written in the words of Isaiah, the son of Amos, the prophet, who said, quote, he will bring upon thee and upon thy people and upon thy father's house days that have not come from the day that Ephraim departed from Judah. And so here I think they add words here. But as for all them that reject the commandments and the statutes, they shall be requited with the recompense of the wicked. When God will bring a visitation upon the land, when there shall come to pass the word which is written by the hand of Zechariah the prophet, O sword, awake against my shepherd and against the man that is my fellow, saith God, smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered, and I will turn mine hand against the little ones. Okay, so I guess this is not simply filling in different words. That was completely different. Instead of quoting Amos, he quoted Zechariah. So I guess it's two versions or two separate examples from the Old Testament to prove a point. Okay, verse 4. When the two houses of Israel separated, Ephraim departed from Judah, and all who proved faithless were delivered to the sword, and those who held fast escaped into the land of the north. As he said, and I will cause to go into captivity Sikoth, your king, and Chian, your images. Sikoth, I think, is the word from which we get Scythian. And Chian, your images. Not sure what word that translates it, but Sikoth would be Scythian. That's how our ancestors became known as Scythians. The star of your God, which ye made for yourselves beyond Damascus. The books of the law are the tabernacle of the king, as he said, and I will raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen. The king is the congregation, and the Chian, the images, are the books of the prophets, whose words Israel has despised. And the star is he who studied the law, who came to Damascus. As it is written, there shall come forth a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. The scepter is the prince of all the congregation. So it's pretty obvious to me here, if this is all to be taken literally, these last three verses here, the teacher of righteousness and the star is the leader of this Damascus group and probably also the chief Essene. John Beauclerk says Sikoth is a Mesopotamian star god. So, of course, and Yahweh is using that terminology to criticize the Israelites for following a false god. Thank you. Thank you, John. Very good. The scepter is the prince of all the congregation. So I think what's going on here is that these Essenes, these Maccabees, who remain true to Yahweh's laws, are giving themselves a lot of credit, and probably they're probably hoping that whoever their leader was, and he's not identified here, we're not given the names, and I think the Essenes were very humble people to begin with, and probably also they refrained from using each other's names. They probably used code names too, so that their names could not be found out by the Pharisees or by the Romans, because the Romans would have disapproved of this group as well. So we're in chapter 9, verses 10 through 20. And I see we've got about 20 minutes left. And so let me just go through. This is a very interesting document, and we're not going to get through this today, so there's definitely going to be a part 3. And if Brother Greg doesn't show up next Friday, we'll just continue with this document. But let's continue here now that it's divided into columns A and B again. And column A, and when he shall destroy all the sons of Battle-Din, these shall escape during the period of the first visitation, but those who proved faithless shall be delivered to the sword. So it's telling us that when Yahweh sends the Assyrians, for example, to chastise Israel, only the guilty ones will be handed over to the sword, and the innocent will be allowed to escape. But we know also that many children were slaughtered in these visitations. But we cannot judge Yahweh in this matter, because if he chooses to take an infant, he's not going to judge the infant by the law. I have a feeling that he will simply allow that infant to become part of the kingdom, and thereby escape physical judgment of its own sins, which it obviously would have committed had it grown up. The Bible does not really address this subject. Verse 10, column B. And they that give heed unto him are the poor of the flock. These shall escape. And again, as I said earlier, the wealthy are the ones who are most likely to succumb to temptation and to faithlessness, because they become vain and arrogant and often cruel as well. These, that is, the poor, of the flock, these shall escape during the period of the visitation, but the rest shall be handed over to the sword when the Messiah comes from the Aaron of Israel, just as it was during the period of the first visitation, concerning which he spake through Ezekiel, to set a mark upon the foreheads of them that sigh and cry. But the rest were delivered to the sword that avengeth with the vengeance of the covenant. So I think this is not necessarily a prophecy of the judgment day, but this is how judgment works in general. Verse 12, and this also shall be the judgment of all them that have entered into his covenant, who will not hold fast to these statutes. They shall be visited for destruction through the hand of Belial. This is the day on which God shall visit, as he hath spoken. And let me jump back to column A. And of course, Belial has visited America and the white Christian world with great visitation today. He's in our churches. He's in our government. He's in the media, or I should say it. It is in the media and in the doctor's offices, giving you injections of poison. Belial is literally everywhere except where his faithful people are. And John says, Chian was later associated with Saturn. He was a desert deity. So these are names of pagan gods. Thank you. Back to column A, verse 12 and 13. And this also shall be the judgment of all them who have entered into his covenant, who will not hold fast to these statutes. Now here again is a misprint again. It says statues. They shall be visited for destruction through the hand of Belial. This is the day on which God shall visit as he has spoken. The princes of Judah were like them that removed the landmark. Upon them will I pour out my wrath like water. So Yahweh always visits us because he expects us to obey his laws. And therefore he gets especially angry with us when we disobey him. Verse 15, actually, upon them will I pour out my wrath like water, for they are too sick to be healed. Oh boy. Yeah, I think I know some white people like that. Too sick to be healed. And they have been at the head of all the rebels. Yeah, they're the pulpit bastards. Verse 15. Because they have not turned from the way of, or traitors. Should be of traitors. It says or here. Because they have not turned from the way of traitors, but have wallowed in the ways of harlots and in the wealth of wickedness and in revenge. And every man beareth a grudge against his brother, and every man hateth his neighbor. Although these people preach love, they certainly don't practice it. And they committed trespass every man against his next of kin, and drew near to unchastity. Not just drew near, they practiced it, and exalted themselves with a view to wealth and unjust gain. And every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Wow, this is outstanding. This elaborates a lot on the Old Testament verses. Let me read verses 18 and 19 of column A, and I'll jump back over to column B. And they chose every man the stubbornness of his heart, and they separated not from the people. So these were the guys who were mixing with the Edomites. Verse 19, and they cast off restraint with a high hand to walk in the way of the wicked, concerning whom God said, their wine is the poison of dragons and the cruel venom of asps. And I think the vaccination needle will substitute here as well. So jumping now over to column B, verses 15 through 19. Because they entered into the covenant of repentance and yet have not turned from the way of traitors, but they have dealt wantonly in the ways of fornication, in the wealth of wickedness and in revenge. And every man beareth a grudge against his brother. I guess he's got two different versions of these passages of the Damascus document from the Dead Sea Scrolls here. In the wealth of wickedness and in revenge, and every man beareth a grudge against his brother, and every man hateth his neighbor. And they committed trespass every man against his next of kin, and drew near to unchastity, and they made themselves strong with a view to wealth and unjust gain. And every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And they chose every man the stubbornness of his heart, and they separated not from the people and their sins. Verse 19, I have to scroll down. And they cast off restraint with a high hand to walk in the ways of the wicked, concerning to whom God said, their wine is the poison of dragons and the cruel venom of asps. Verse 20, which I think is the last verse of this section. Yes. The dragons are the kings of the nations, and their wine is their ways. And the venom of asps is the head of the kings of Javan, who came to execute vengeance upon them. John, could you look about the meaning of Javan? Could be a form of Japheth, who became the Greeks. And, of course, the Greeks were, they weren't exactly Baal worshippers, but they were pagans, definitely pagans. Seleucids, that's possible. It's a good guess. Verse 20 from column A. The dragons are the kings of the nations, and their wine is their ways, and the venom of asps is the head of the kings of Javan. Okay, Javan being, of course, descendants of Japheth, who came to execute vengeance upon them. So the different spelling, the more familiar spelling is Javan, descendants of Japheth. So, yes, it is a reference to the pagan Greeks, of whom the Seleucids were one branch. Okay, I think I only have enough time for the next section, chapter 9, verses 21 through 23. I'll first read from column A. But despite all these things, they who builded the wall and daubed it with untempered mortar perceived not. For one who was perturbed of spirit and talked lies talked to them, that the wrath of God was kindled against all his congregation. Nor that Moses said, not for thy righteousness or for the uprightness of thine heart dost thou go into inherit these nations, but because he loved thy fathers and because he would keep the oath. So in other words, we're being told it's not because we're victorious warriors and conquering heroes that these nations have been turned over to us. No, it's because he's just fulfilling his promises to us. Therefore, we have to remind ourselves of our covenant relation constantly. And we should never forget it. Same verses now from column B. But despite all these things, they who builded the wall and daubed it with untempered mortar perceived not, for one who walked in wind and weighed storms and talked lies to man, that the wrath of God was kindled against all his congregation. In other words, he's saying everybody's guilty, which is not the truth. Only some were guilty, and usually is the more high-ranking and prosperous, wealthy status people who were most guilty. Verse 23, nor Moses said to Israel, not for thy righteousness nor for the uprightness of thine heart dost thou go into inherit these nations, but because he loved thy fathers and because he would keep the oath. Okay? This is why the white race has prospered for the last 1900 years. Actually, let me qualify that for the last 1,800 years, until 1815, from the birth of Christ till the year 1815, that's when the prophecy that Isaac made to Esau, that Esau would have the dominion. And the book of Revelation tells us that this is the little season that will culminate with the judgment day, and that's in Revelation 19 and 20, the little season in which the deceiver is set out to deceive, let loose to deceive the world. Well, that's the Rothschilds. That's the rabbis. And their henchmen, the Judeo-Christian pulpit bastards. That's who the deceiver is. Of course, I have said many times that the Jews could not do half as much damage to our people were it not for the race traitors, the shills, and Shabbos goys, as the Jews refer to them. Traitors to our race who work for the money the Jews pay them. But we're being told here that these promises that we would be nation builders, these were kept by Yahweh because he promised these things to us. He made these promises to Abraham, and they were fulfilled in us. And it was not because of our righteousness or of our greatness as a people that we accomplished these things. These were given to us because Yahweh promised them to us. Yes, he is in control of all things. So there's so much wisdom in this Damascus document because it's giving us the perspective of the Essenes, who, according to Josephus, were the only pure-blooded Judahites in Jerusalem, the only pure-blooded priesthood in Jerusalem. And it's obvious to me that the Essenes were either cast out of Jerusalem by the combined efforts of the Pharisees and Sadducees, or they voluntarily left Jerusalem because they foresaw a purge or a persecution of the Essenes coming. And so that's probably, and it's probably a little bit of both going on there at this time. So folks, it's really important. I can't stress enough the importance of these apocryphal books. They are Israelite literature. These are history books preserved for us by Yahweh in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And it behooves us to study these documents to give us a true historical perspective and to give us the mindset of our ancestors, the Essenes, at this time period. Very important to know what's on their minds and how they perceive the events of their own day and how they perceive the judgment day, the coming judgment day, and the coming of the Messiah. And I think all the people, even when Yahshua made his triumphal ride into Jerusalem on the Catholics call Palm Sunday, that on this triumphal ride, the Israelites were ready to welcome him as their Messiah king. But the Pharisees, being the Jews of their day, made all kinds of conspiracies against him and against the Israelites who would support him. And they're the ones who caused his assassination on the cross. Unfortunately, there were way too many Israelites who allowed themselves to be deceived by these Pharisees. They should have known that the Messiah was standing right there before them, riding on that donkey. But they were probably afraid for fear of the Jews. They didn't want to endure any punishment or persecution from them because why? Well, they had the Roman army to inflict punishment upon the Israelites who stood by Yahshua. But why would they be afraid? Well, it's because they have forgotten their own law. Yahweh tells us if we obey his laws, he will protect us. Yahweh tells us in the book of Isaiah, I think Leroy looked it up, Isaiah 49:25, I will contend with him that contendeth with thee. So if you're in trouble and somebody's attacking you, just remember, Yahweh will protect you. He will fight for you. He will destroy your enemy for you. That is, of course, if you are righteous. So you will not escape, you know, chastisement if you are unrighteous. Actually, we are encouraged to accept chastisement when it's deserved. That's called humility. Yes, and all these things are coming to pass right now, because the events that occurred in Jerusalem and in Judea in the days of the first Advent are simply a sample on a small scale of what is happening today on a planetary scale. And that's the difference between, one of the differences between the two Advents. The first Advent was Yahshua coming to forgive our past sins and to allow himself to be sacrificed as our Passover by the Pharisees. But the same thing is happening on a planetary scale today, but this time when he comes, he's the one going to dishing out the punishment, dishing out the judgment. And so it's going to be curtains for the Jews when he comes back. On that note, I have to conclude. I see I've already run over time on Eurofolk Radio, and I have to call it quits. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition, and I'll see you next Friday night. If Greg is not here, we'll continue with the Damascus document. Thanks for listening. See you next time, and also be on Restoration Hour tomorrow morning as well. Take care. Yahweh bless. Good night.
Call recording.